from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, into the 9 o'clock hour we go. Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. Stros last night, 6-0. They beat the Baltimore Orioles. And they did it getting contributions from the bottom of the lineup. This is one of those games where they didn't need the big three or four at the top to carry the water. Gamble. Old B Gamble,
yes.
The new guy, B Gams.
Yeah, I knew it all along. I knew it was gonna be Gamble night. This is gonna be just as it was with earlier in the season.
Okay. Seth's pointing at me right
the
now.
The name of the guy that came in and then the Astros went on a little bit of a win streak. The Day. I named it The Day.
Oh, Cesar Salazar. Okay,
yeah, all right. I don't feel any guilt about you not having that at the ready when I said
you
that right now. Cesar Salazar.
You stopped and pointed at me with a blank stare on your face, and I'm supposed to go Cesar Salazar?
Because I was calling it Gamble Day.
Well, once you said we named a day after him, I got it, but you said The Guy.
Right, yeah.
That's right. Like I'll name that tune in one
I thought
one
you would
note.
Have remembered 90 minutes ago when I asked the same question and you had.
Yes, I didn't. Yeah.
So anyway, it's on a day when we found out that finally Alex Bregman's going to be moving to first base. Finally.
Well, he's taking some reps there.
Yeah, you know, he'll be there. He'll be the fixture, Sean. So we found out yesterday afternoon that they're going to expose him to first base.
Yeah.
It sounded creepy, Chandler Rome.
That was the wording, wasn't it?
Sounded like he was going to expose himself at first base or something. Look, I've been arrested for that. We don't need Alex Bregman getting arrested for that
right,
as well.
That time Seth ran out to first base at Minute Maid Park and exposed himself.
Yeah. You haven't seen the clips because MLB doesn't want you to know the
it's
truth.
It's before social media. Yeah.
That Alex Bregman will be moving. He might see some time at first base. We'll see. But that it was a really good performance against a good pitcher offensively. And a lot to feel good about after a couple days where it felt like,
they lost. So. So they, and they're doing this against a good team. We'll see. Like the Orioles have yet to beat the Astros this year.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll be in
there. Gotta get over that hump sometimes if you want to win the World Series.
Well, hopefully it doesn't, if they face them in the postseason, that's not, they still got three more games this weekend. So we'll see what happens. But Spencer Arrighetti, solid again. You know, Ocho texted in earlier and said how Spencer Arrighetti, he was a little wild, but it was a team that likes to chase in the Orioles. But I'm like, I don't know, man. He walked one guy, you know?
Yeah, no, and I think, too, like one hits. Of the things that Arrighetti has, when he started to really turn into something else, it was, he had a couple games stretch where he was just nibbling at the strike zone a little too much. And it looked like he didn't know whether he just didn't have the control or he was just trying to be a little too cute.
Yeah.
When he started being more aggressive, it was really when he started kind of unleashing that angry side of him that I think now he's learned when he can and when he can't, and when he can throw more balls and when he shouldn't. So I think he's got a real good feel for that. That's one of the things where I feel like he's become a veteran Major League Baseball pitcher over the course of this season.
Yeah. It is interesting how first base has become this new spot where they park guys to try to keep their bats in the lineup, you know, like it's become like the quasi DH because you got Yiner over there now. And if they're getting Bregman reps over there at first base, because this, I said this last week, but I thought we would see, given just how subpar the outfield had been, I thought we'd try to see them doing a lot more lineups where they're keeping Caratini and Yiner's bats.
Keeping Yiner in him.
Caratini's a capable bat, which you can't say about some of these outfielders.
And that's
right
a weird
now.
That another conversation we wouldn't have been having before Yiner got that 2-game break. Whenever this stretch started, was just like, okay, well, yeah, but if you move Bregman to first, then yeah, where do you put Yiner? And do you want him? It's like, do you want him catching that much? And Caratini's been swinging the bat real well too.
Well, you park Yiner at DH, but then you go Yordan in left field.
Right,
you know,
right.
You're right. Yeah, it's like a whack-a-mole game.
Yeah, I'm saying Yiner is a part of that equation.
Yeah,
there was a time where you'd be like, okay, yeah, well, you sit Yiner.
You
that
sit
day.
Yiner.
Where now you're at a point where you can't sit Yiner, but you also don't want him playing catcher all that much.
Dusty would for sure have sat Yiner.
Yes.
No, you have to have Yiner's bat in the lineup every day. It's non-negotiable with Tucker out, especially. You've got to have Yiner's bat in the lineup every day.
Maybe Bregman can play outfield. Oh, no, the throwing. That's the whole thing. You don't want him to have to throw the ball
right.
that much. I forgot the very reason that we're even having this ridiculous conversation about Bregman going to play first
gremlins
base.
Gremlins in the elbow, man. Gremlins in the elbow.
Told you the gremlins are nothing to mess with, man.
No.
You get water on that elbow, and all of a sudden, he's just tearing your house up.
It's tough. Probably, I would say, two last night. One of the better developments is the fact that they were up 6 runs. Means that on the heels of a couple of days where you only got 3 and change from Ronel Blanco, you only got 5 from Verlander, which was kind of planned in close games, you got kind of a blowout so you could finish up the game with Dubin and Ferguson in there. Mm-hmm. You didn't have to touch Abreu. You didn't have to touch Hader, whoever else you view as your leverage relievers at this point, because Presley is still out. Those guys got an extra day's rest. They basically had an off day. The Astros have had off days every Thursday for like last month, it feels like.
Right, right.
Hader and Abreu got an off day yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. You know? And Hector Neris is back on the team.
Hector's back. Okay, so let's dive into this a little bit here. Hector Neris is back. He was DFA'd by the Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
He was their closer at one point this year. And it started to not go well. His ERA is a little high, 3.89. He had 17 saves. Kind of miscast as a closer, though. Like, a lot of his advanced stats showed that like his numbers probably should have been worse than they were.
Yeah.
He was getting hit pretty hard. His FIP, not all that great. But so kind of miscast. So the Cubs cut him loose, and the Astros picked him up off of waivers.
Yeah, and he's the whole thing about Hector Neris is almost, I always looked at him as almost like a subtle pitcher version of George Springer, almost.
Well,
like there's an energy about him.
There's an article about this that Chandler or somebody wrote earlier this year about the leadership that has left the building in the last couple years. And Neris was brought up. And if this is a role that he plays in this bullpen, like if he's here to be the new Montero where he's just mopping things up.
Yeah.
If he plays the role that we've heard about him playing with this team the last couple of years from a leadership standpoint, I think it's a really good signing. He was sort of the liaison for a lot of the Latin American
pitchers.
Well,
he had those huge like dinners for like the new Latin American players in the system.
Yeah.
And would kind of try to be like a godfather to their, not try to be, but like godfather of a guy, like kind of take him under his wing and, you know, tell him about the challenges and everything.
You know who he is?
Who?
He's Case Keenum.
Oh,
he's
okay.
An actual pitcher on the staff who is brought in as much for his leadership and his willingness to dine with younger players. Remember, you know, Case and Davis and the wives take CJ out every Friday?
I wonder, you know, when Hector Neris, as many times as like the Astros have done this, sometimes successfully, sometimes not, like with Montero, where a guy has his career best year with the Astros, and sometimes they go ahead and make him one of the highest paid relievers in the league.
Yeah.
Hector Neris had his career best year in terms of ERA, at least last year. He was 1.71 ERA with the Astros.
Yeah, he did.
And they let him walk.
Yep. Have you seen, by the way, and we're going to get to this listener of the drive in a second here, Montero is tearing it up at Sugarland right now.
Oh.
As of a couple days ago, he had 4 appearances,
maybe
9 strikeouts.
Maybe they figured something. You never know. You know, gotta get some time, a little space.
Dude,
a little,
they still need him at some point.
No, of course. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, Sean. I'm not surprised by a single move they make with the pitchers at any point this year after the onslaught of injuries they've had.
It is funny. Like, everybody's wringing their hands over, like, Stanek is leaving, and Neris is leaving, and Maton is leaving. And they go find these other middle relievers to take over that slot. Not Montero, but like Taylor Scott's been really good for them.
Yeah.
They've gotten some good innings from some no-name guys. So this was on the drive yesterday. I guess there was a listener of theirs that was seeking acknowledgement because she, female listener, the name escapes me, but it'll be part of this cut.
It's relevant.
That she is seeking acknowledgement for pointing out that the Astros should bring back Hector Neris.
Yeah.
From the text line, I text y'all yesterday about Hector Neris before this potential move was even happening.
It was potential, friend. And you said it yourself.
And y'all didn't acknowledge it or speak on it in all caps.
We were poor news.
Acknowledge me. I know sports. Melissa.
Acknowledge me as Payne and Pendergast.
The only female... The only female 6'10 listener, Melissa. First off, we thank you so much for listening to us.
Pendergast and Payne.
But shout out to you, Melissa. We know you know sports. I'm not going to acknowledge you. That's a different show. But check them out. I think you should check them out 6-10 tomorrow, Payne and Pendergast, and force them to acknowledge you.
Shout out to all our lady listeners. Hello,
ladies. By the way,
ladies.
Speaking of ladies, happy birthday to the boss lady.
For real this time.
Yes. She texted me yesterday. She said, you retracted it, huh?
Okay, so yeah, happy birthday.
Sarah Fraser's birthday, yeah.
Birthday. For one, honestly, the first thing that jumped out is show not aware of how many women listeners we have? We have a bunch of women listeners.
We have a lot. They text a lot.
Quite a few. It's not nearly like the majority of our audience or anything, but we have a boatload of them, and they tend to be like the women that tend to listen to our shows tend to be like, oh yeah, this is a cool chick. They're paying attention, you know? Like, it's not whatever stereotypes you have or whatever, just leave them at the door. So I don't feel that Melissa deserves acknowledgement because she wasn't the only person that was talking about Hector Neris. We might not have been talking about it. His name came up at one point.
Yeah.
But it was you don't see every text during the show. And multiple other people were talking about, like, mentioning Hector Neris.
Oh, I was in a good mood. I was going to give it to her.
I'll give it to her then.
Yeah, I was going to give it to her.
Acknowledge me. There we go, Melissa.
Good job.
One more time, Ben. A little louder. Just
acknowledge me.
The people in the back.
I don't want to set a trend of people demanding acknowledgement.
No, it's okay.
Seems a little desperate.
Get out.
That's right, Bandy.
Yeah.
He called in to do that.
No, you're right, Seth. Okay. Melissa, this is a one-off, okay?
Yeah.
It's a one-off.
The other thing, too, I used to have an argument with one of our old program directors who is a little bit more, maybe it's some old-school trappings to him or whatever. And he would bring up, like, well, women are only such and such percentage of the audience. I'm like, dude. There are a lot of purchasing decisions made and guided by the woman in the household that, especially at the time I was doing ads for a urologist.
The urologist
told me, he said, it's about, I think he said like 95% of the appointments are made by the wife.
Yeah.
For the vasectomy. It's like getting a kid to go get his teeth cleaned.
Yeah.
You can't leave him to his own devices. He's not going to set the appointment for the dentist. That's how husbands are with vasectomies. They'll agree to it or they'll know that it needs to be done. But when it comes to pulling the trigger on the snippy snip, it tends to be the wife that actually gets it done.
There weren't a lot of convincing for me.
Yeah.
Went back. I wouldn't say I'm in the 5%. You said 95% set the appointment. I don't think I'm in the 5%, but I think my ex-wife and I both were running to the phone to grab it, to call the place and make the appointment at about the same time.
Yeah.
And this is no disrespect to my kids. It's just a quantity issue. My kids are awesome. They were great kids, but they were kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had all three of them within 16 months. Yeah. And so by the time they were like 3, 3, and 2, it's like we can't add to this.
Right, you're living in modern America. It's not like you're trying to have as many people as to help out on the farm as possible.
No,
like,
no, no.
These are a drain.
There's a tuition. yeah. No, I don't quantify it that way, but we didn't want any more. Well, we had boy-girl twins.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're kind of set there. You got one of each, and we're not looking to have 7 kids or anything like that.
Yeah.
And then along came Sammy. It's like, oh, okay, well, now we got to figure this thing out. So I was happy to go do it. I had mine done the week of March Madness.
Yeah.
The Thursday of March Madness, I had mine done because you are doctor's orders supposed to sit on the couch with nobody bothering you for 3 days.
Yeah.
And it's my favorite 3 days to sit on the couch. At least it was back then.
Mm-hmm.
The first 3 days of 4 days of March Madness.
You know what a really effective birth control method is? Just menopause. That's what I would always say. Like, oh, why don't we just wait around for menopause? That'll be fine, right? Like, we'll be good after that. Except, I guess that turns out that's not actually all that effective. Sometimes,
sometimes you
have a menopause relapse.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It doesn't always
I feel like we're delving into some dangerous territory.
No, not for me. I haven't personally. I was just reading about it one day, and it was like, there are women that thought that they were totally in the clear,
really?
And then Turns out they were ovulating.
All right, if you're one of the many women that listen to Payne and Pendergast, text in if this phenomenon has happened with you.
Okay, yeah. Did you, and then had a, well, yeah, and then if you had a child because of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Having a kid at 55 or something is not in most people's
awful.
Plan.
It sounds terrible.
I'd do it. Yeah. I'm 49 and I'd be a deadbeat dad. I'd leave, man. I'd be to Costa Rica so fast with a fake passport.
Here you go, Brandy. Oh, my God.
Seth, do you feel any guilt? Seth, my ad. You're talking to Jose here. Shut the hell up.
Seth with a bad Hispanic accent.
I would be in Costa Rica for 7 years and have learned like 10 Spanish words. Yeah,
yeah.
Still, but trying to live on the land.
What did you just hit?
What the hell's this quesadilla?
That's what that would be.
Yeah,
that's what that would be.
I'd be in Ecuador complaining about the lack of hot dogs.
Okay, now we've
6 foot four.
Oh, he doesn't, stick out at all. Hey.
Is that Ernest Hemingway?
Yeah.
No, it's just the deadbeat
What
dad.
Are the All in the Family reruns on? Yeah. A text message, I quantify it this way. Tuition, cars, clothes, and food.
Food's a big one. I don't know how you guys would like.
I don't either, dude.
Lots of teenagers feed these kids.
I'm being serious. Like, yeah. I do not know how you do it these days.
I tell them to just go fend for yourself. Right? My wife grew up, they had, you know, her father was a farmer, and they had four kids in 4 years. So they did have a lot of help around the farm, but it sounds like the food situation was like a pack of rats when you throw a piece of cheese out.
Really?
It was like, she's always still kind of impressed that we have food around the house.
Really?
A pantry full of food.
Because it wasn't always that way.
It was
her?
Like, no, the food got in the door and then it was gone. There was no like, are there still some crackers in the cupboard?
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
They're gone.
I'm still blown away by this menopause relapse thing you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't know how common it is.
I got to go do some Google.
I just know that it's supposed to be like, you just don't get cocky.
Yeah.
Don't get cocky if all of a sudden your wife's in menopause that you don't have to worry about it at all anymore. It's not quite as cut and dry as that.
Tanner says, acknowledge me. I demand you acknowledge me for acknowledging that I should not request acknowledgement. That's not going to work, Tanner. Yeah, thank you. I was going to say,
I'll credit him for the effort.
Yeah. Yeah, you get credit, but that's it.
No ironic acknowledgments here, all right?
Nope, not on this show. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you.
Sacred ground.
Hey, college football, sacred ground. College football starts tomorrow.
What?
This is the wildest college football story I've seen in the age of NIL so far. And one guess as to who the head coach is that's behind it. That is next.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey, and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at MyBob's.com to play now.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
I don't know that Deion Sanders has had any notable press conferences since the one last week where he wouldn't answer questions from CBS and was correcting reporters the whole time and asking the beat writer from the Denver Post why he even shows up at these press conferences because
right, yeah.
He's not a cheerleader for the team.
Yeah, no, and he refused to answer a question from CBS reporter.
CBS,
basically something the CBS website said. He wouldn't talk to the local CBS affiliate.
It's like they couldn't
be she'd clacked out the article or something.
Yeah, like they could not be more unrelated. Apparently now comes this story, and this is from SI.com. A former Colorado assistant coach. And I'm bringing this up because college football starts tomorrow. Man, college football has become a fun soap opera. I didn't know that I would like this world of the portal and the NIL as much as I do, but it's definitely content worthy. Mm-hmm. A former Colorado assistant coach, quote, spent time in the Middle East this past holiday season lobbying Saudi Arabia's PIF, the Public Investment Fund, the fund that is funding the LIV Golf Tour.
Yeah.
For NIL funding on behalf of CU football. So Deion Sanders sent one of his coaches, his special teams coordinator, guy by the name of Trevor Riley, and he resigned back on August the 1st. So a couple weeks ago, the guy up and resigns. He went on record about trying to pull in funding for the school's NIL collective. He told Sports Illustrated there were no bad feelings between anyone with the program, but rather he was at odds with a few people in the Colorado administration. Riley said he spent time in the Middle East this past holiday season lobbying the PIF for NIL money on behalf of Colorado. A copy of what Riley says was in his resignation letter to the CU AD and school president was reviewed by Sports Illustrated. Here's what it said. Quote, "You paid me $90,000 a year and let me handle special teams. I did all this work in your name and was told to pursue it." Again, this is to Colorado's administration. "I burned through all my contacts in my Mormon community, which is worth about $3 trillion. Now I can't get these people to answer my calls because I just found out today that none of my endeavors will happen," whatever that means.
Yeah.
"I even went to Saudi Arabia and got a meeting with the Saudis who were interested in pursuing business. I have email receipts to prove it, and you guys let it fall flat on its face." So this guy sounds like he had some stuff cooking. This special teams coordinator had some stuff cooking with possibly the Church of Latter-day Saints, had some stuff cooking in Saudi Arabia, and the CU administration. So his issue is not with Deion.
Right.
His issue is with the AD and the school president, and it sounds like this guy feels like a sales guy who went and got some deals down to the 5-yard line, and he just needed his boss to come in and close the deal, and nothing got closed. And so now he made a trip over to Saudi Arabia during the holidays for no reason.
Yeah.
And he apparently he's burned all his – like his network of Mormon – of the Mormon community jilted for some reason.
That's the part that I just – where something seems amiss a little bit. Like, okay, what part of you reaching out to all of your Mormon contacts resulted in them – like exactly what did you present and how to the point where now they won't talk to you?
Yeah.
Like that feels like I need to know more about exactly how he was conducting his business because that's not – typically – yeah, you reach out to a contact about something, and if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out, right?
Yeah.
Like, so now all of a sudden, people aren't returning his calls or something.
Burned to the ground.
Yeah, I don't. I need to know more about just exactly what he was promising and what he was allowed to promise, and if he was even supposed to be in Saudi Arabia. You know, like it might very well be that the administration found out that he'd gone off to Saudi Arabia to look for money from the Saudis, and they thought, oh, what the hell?
Well, let's assume for a second it was a directive from the school.
Yeah.
Because this feels like it would be right up Deion Sanders' alley to go find NIL money wherever you can find it.
Yeah, yeah. Like maybe he just had a blank check to go find money.
Yeah. There's a lot of non-traditional things that have happened in college football.
Yeah.
The Saudis getting involved in it is way out.
That turns it all of a sudden into that's a crossover hit.
Yeah,
that ends up becoming that's something you talk about on the nightly news and everything else like that. People are giving speeches in Congress about it. As much as it isn't anymore, it's an American pastime. Like everything, it's been so it's been so disheveled or disorganized over the last couple of years that who knows what college football is anymore.
This the concept of private money coming into college athletic departments is not a new one. I mean, it is fairly new, but this is not the first time. That's been a big story this offseason is there have been people presenting on possibly, you know, because now it's the curtain's pulled back now. Yeah. It's a gigantic business where labor has been cheap for all these years, and now this thing is being run way more like a business where kids may happen to go to class.
Yeah.
It's really like a minor league, you know, minor, especially the Power Four conferences.
Yeah. But it's minor league, but with free agency.
Right. It's crazy. But purely from a fiscal standpoint, these schools have talked about getting private equity involved now because they got to pay all these players now, you know?
Yeah, it is. It's as wild a situation, I think, as we've seen in any major sport, isn't it?
Yes.
Because in the pros, there's rules, there's collective bargaining agreements, teams do have rights to retain a player, and even though that's dissolving a little bit and fraying at the edges, it's still, there's structure, where there's just zero structure here. It's anybody's guess. It's beyond my intellectual capabilities to even understand all the implications of college football having the Saudi trust involved in college football. It's crazy. It's just crazy.
It's not affected the popularity of the sport either. It's now some old school fans, it may have affected the popularity with them. I submit that they all still watch, but begrudgingly. I don't think if you're a college football fan, I don't think you're quitting college football over what the environment's like in there right now. All the ticket sales and all the TV ratings tell us the sport has never been healthier.
Well, I do think that there is still something. Like at the end of the day, you know, you're rooting for the laundry, right? You're cheering for the laundry. Like people are identified
with
the
connection,
team
and
the logo and your time at that school.
Yes.
I think I don't know what it would be like with college football. You know, what percentage of people in the stands could actually tell you who all the starting offensive linemen are?
Right.
You know, I don't. There's the diehards. And the diehards, I think, are going to be diehards no matter what. And the guy, if you are a diehard and you've paid attention to recruiting through the years, then you're also going to be paying attention to NIL and everything. But for the people that probably create the bulk of ticket sales, which are alumni that just want to go and tailgate and everything, I don't know if any of this really affects them as much.
Right.
I think it's still rooting for the school. Rooting for your alma mater and all of that.
If anything, the NIL has pushed the athletes to the forefront from a marketing standpoint.
Yeah.
And it's actually probably, I don't know if inadvertence is the right word, but maybe just an unintended consequence of all the NIL is that the average fan you're talking about is actually connecting with the sport better. Because I see this guy in Dr. Pepper commercials.
Yeah, that's a good
point. And I see this guy doing this and that,
yeah,
and they're just way more out in the
present.
Yeah. Like, oh, I like this guy. I'm gonna watch some guy. And I think Deion has actually probably, as bad as they were last year, that burst of popularity at the beginning of the season last year drew a lot of the average people in. And there's so much college football going on. Even just when you get highlights fed to you during a Colorado game, the reaction for some people might be, oh, or their market, or they're telling you, hey, coming up after this is so and so against so and so. Hey, I'll watch that, you know? So Deion's been good for it.
The you got a question on the text line about what was it about Alabama?
It was on
the TV. Oh,
was
that what was
yeah,
it on TV?
The question was, what would be considered a success at Alabama this
okay.
year? And I just laugh at the question because I'm like,
well, I mean,
any Alabama person, it's anything better than 11-1.
Well, realistically, their over-under this year is 9.5.
That's what
and
I would guess, yeah.
I looked at I had to subtract the bowl games out of this. I think the last time they had just 10 wins, fewer than 10 wins in a season was 2010.
Yeah.
So they would have won 9 regular season games that year, and then they won the Capital One Bowl.
Yeah.
So if they win 10 games this year, that's a success for
Kirby
Alabama.
Smart and Nick Saban have won 13 of the last 18 national championships. Those two guys.
Bring the Saudis in. We got to break this up.
Right.
Like, I know it's an old trope.
Monopoly.
Like, oh, bring the Saudis in to fix college football.
Teddy Roosevelt, trust buster.
I just want, you know, you reading that stat just made me feel like, yep, it's time for the Saudis.
Yep. Get over here. Larry's in Stafford. He wants in on a Friday before a football game. Go figure. What's going on, Larry? How you doing?
What's going on, Sean, Seth? Hey, I'm a traditionalist and a capitalist at heart. I mean, I like the Catholics and convicts and watching the U come down and camouflage, getting ready to, you know, play or when they play Nebraska or, you know, I like the Texas Longhorns and Aggie tradition back in, you know, when I was in high school and just sitting down and watching it. And I also like money. I like being able to do fun things, drive fast cars and things like that. But it's just something real, real, real uncomfortable when you start talking about allowing Saudi money to be involved in things, man. And it's weird because I'm a big Deion fan, and I hope their program is successful up there, but it seems like there's just too much going on. And I blame the NCAA for this because they allowed NIL and the portal to all of a sudden just manifest itself. And it has messed up not just the college games in terms of just the purity of it, but it's affected the high school game also because a lot of these kids are not getting opportunities now because of the portal and NIL because these dudes are going back to school. So it's kind of messed up the tradition on both levels. And I understand that it never was an amateur sport because Big Tex and all them boys was paying everybody under the table. But there was still something pure about just sitting down watching college football on Saturday and watching your favorite team in your Letterman jacket or whatever that you went to and just really enjoyed the camaraderie of having spent time on them yards, man. So it's a real weird thing for me when I see all these money involvements from different places, but we just got to get used to it. And I guess, like I said, as you get older, man, things just change and you just got to start accepting it. I want to touch on a couple other things real quick. Bringing Neris back, that was just one of the smartest moves that they had done over there. He can help you in your bullpen, so you might as well go get him. The next thing, and y'all was talking about having kids at 50. You might as well find the bridge over the ship channel and jump off of it if your ass is having a kid at 50. Because, look, man, once you get them kids out of the house or whatever, life becomes real, real good again for you and the old lady, man. So I got a buddy, man, that I really, really care about, and he was 53 years old. He had already had four kids, had a son drafted in Major League Baseball. All of a sudden, he had two twins and another child after 56. No, dog, I ain't trying to do nothing like that, man. So it's just weird, man, because once you get to an age, man, where you really want to try to enjoy whatever life you got left, man, that's what it's about. Last thing before I let y'all go, hey, man, what McVay and D'Amico did over there with that training camp practice and everything, that's what the NFL really, really should be about when you have them joint practices. Them boys was over there doing some real good work from what I'm hearing, man. And the fact that you get to go up against other teams and then play them, it's getting ready for football time, fellas. Y'all might want to amp up like I'm going to be amped up for the rest of the season and I'll haul.
All right, we'll see you tomorrow, Larry. We'll see you tomorrow out at NRG Stadium. Yeah, Larry touching on kids after the age of 50 circles back to a conversation Seth and I were having in a previous segment where Seth informed me of the phenomenon of second menopause.
Yeah.
Text message, I'm in my second menopause. Yep, it happened. New baby at 62.
Yeah, we had a couple others say that but it's between the ages of 47 and 55.
Yeah.
Where you might have a little spell where you think you're fully in menopause,
right.
But then all of a sudden, yeah, those little fallopian tubes engage.
Yeah.
Start squeezing out little potential babies. Little half babies.
They wake up, they sit up like the Undertaker.
We got them.
Yeah.
Right. They're talking to each other. Yeah. And they're like, yeah, it's been a couple of years. I think they're getting complacent.
all right, Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, let's get you ready for tomorrow and the weekend. Texans, Rams. Biggest questions, the biggest question for me heading into this game on Saturday, and it's something that a year and a half ago, I never thought we would be saying these things, but we'll have that for you coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
This time tomorrow, Seth and I will be 45 minutes into Texans Countdown prior to the Rams and the Texans, which kicks off at noon.
Oh, my gosh.
9 o'clock. Yeah, 9 o'clock. Be there tomorrow, man.
Less than 24 hours from now.
Okay. Yep. Oh. 9 o'clock Texans Countdown. noon kickoff. And then Clint Sterner and I have you for a post-game following the final preseason game before the season gets going. Here's D'Amico Ryans yesterday when he was asked, what are you looking for in the final preseason game?
This last preseason game, really looking forward to the guys who get the reps, seeing them grow and improve. Right now is that kind of like that final exam. Right, we've been going for about a month here in training camp and all of the coaching points and all the tips we've been giving guys. Like, can you go out and pass this final exam? Like, how much have you grown? How much have you learned? And can you showcase that right on the big stage?
All right. So, I mean, look, I'm reading into that as the backups doing that. You know,
they're not trying to figure out if most of the guys that they know are starters, they already feel like, okay, we've seen them in NFL games before.
There's like 30 guys who won't dress for this
or
game.
Or like Kamari Lassiter, D'Amico just can't say enough positive things about. They feel good about Kamari Lassiter's consistency. There's just a whole lot of guys that are battling for a roster spot. And usually there's probably at this moment, even though it's tougher than in previous years, there's not that many guys that they have questions about, but there are, every year there's guys that really flash or something clicks for them, and you think, all right, yeah, there's something to this kid. Plus, you think, oh, the guy flashes in that last preseason game, all the other teams see that too. And maybe we're thinking about him as a practice squad guy, but like, wow, people are going to like this guy when they see this, so we're just going to keep him on the roster instead of trying to expose him to the practice squad.
What position group or player do you think sits out tomorrow that you would actually like to see play?
The first string offensive line.
You would like to see 100%. Them play.
I'd love to see them play.
Yeah.
I want to get as many full speed reps against, if not starters, then at least, you know, full speed competition, just to get to keep working on getting the timing down, learning some lessons about how things need to be done. In any offense, I was about to say in this offense, really in any offense, the offensive line is the position group that works with the most critical cooperation between the members of the line. Like, they've got to be like five fingers in a glove. And right now, so far, I really haven't seen that yet. And there's part of me that would be like, no, play them the whole game. They need that time. That would be stupid. But there's a part of me that wants to see that.
Yeah.
And if not even to diagnose or figure out whether Kenyon Green should actually be the starter or anything, just because I think they need the reps.
More reps. Yeah, more reps.
They face a pretty damn good defensive line in Indianapolis
in
week one.
They do. They absolutely do. I think, to me, the biggest storyline coming into this game is what happens with Damian Pierce, most popular guy on the team a couple years ago. Still very popular, just not as productive as he was as a rookie. And the window for Damian Pierce tomorrow afternoon, Seth, to me, ranges from he's in sweats and hoodies like C.J. Stroud and Nico Collins and everybody else is, or he's getting 12 carries in the first half of this game.
I think, like, and honestly, I don't know if there's anything you can tell by if he's playing or not, because I feel like you think that if he's not playing, it's because they think he's the guy.
Yes.
I think there's a chance if he's not playing that they're trying to trade him and they just don't want him to get injured before a potential trade. I do think that maybe to do right by Damian, because he's that kind of a player, I think that everybody on the team loves him for good reason. Mm-hmm. And I think Caserio and D'Amico both love him. But it's just increasingly looking more and more like it's just not a fit. And if he's going to reclaim his 2022 form, it might have to be in a different situation. So they might look at it as, oh, you know what, we want to give him every chance and opportunity to just either maybe have something click, and maybe that looks good for people on film, but we want to give him the opportunity to do it and let him go out there and play.
Do you think if I'm a GM of a team that runs the Kubiak-Shanahan system, I'm not touching Damian Pierce, obviously.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of teams that don't run that system.
Like the Rams, who they were practicing against yesterday.
The Rams and several others. I got to imagine if I'm in their front office. If I'm in their front office, this is just the hubris of a front office, right? Yeah. Like, oh, this is how he is over there. We're going to get him in our building and in our system in 2022 all over again.
Yeah, and I think that they very much are thinking that. Like, okay, there's something here. The Texans bring in Cam Akers partly because they've seen the upside of him and they know what he's capable of doing, but the Rams moved away from that system, and it just wasn't a good fit for Cam Akers. So I think that I think that part of it could be that another office thinks, okay, maybe he's better in our system. And I think that a lot of other NFL front offices or coaching staffs are thinking the same thing a lot of our fans and I myself have been saying since last year, which is he looked a hell of a lot different when he was playing at a different body weight. And it some of it might be as simple as, A, get him into a scheme in which he's more comfortable, and B, get him back to where he's breaking tackles. Because right now, it's not just the outside zone plays. It's power. It's gap scheme stuff. It's the old school football. He's not breaking tackles and busting through holes the way he did in 2022. And I think a lot of that is tied to the fact that he's just not as physically powerful as he was then.
There's three scenarios for Dameon Pierce. He's either after Saturday.
Yeah.
He's either on the team, he gets traded, or he gets cut.
Mm-hmm.
Order of likelihood.
I think it's most likely he gets traded.
Traded is number one. I think on the team is number two.
Yeah, I think so.
And then I think cut is the third.
Yeah, I think there's still a part of the Texans that still feel that same way of like, okay, well, there's upside here. We can't just let him, you know, we gotta give it a chance, perhaps, or trade him.
Yeah.
Like, we don't want to just completely let go of a potentially valuable asset.
And they feel like the young guy, like Jawar Jordan and British Brooks, might sneak through waivers, and you bring them back on the practice squad. We have somebody asking, Stacy in LaPorte, asking, what's up, guys? Love the show. This is for both of you. What do you see? Where do you see the running backs landing in the 53-man roster cuts, starting backup practice squad traded? We just talked about Pierre. I think Joe Mixon is the starter. I think Dario Gumbawale is going to make the team just based on how they've used him in the preseason. I think I'm with you. I think Cam Akers makes this team.
Yeah.
And then obviously they're going to have a fullback, whoever that is. I think there will be a fourth running back. It's just a question of what happens with if Dameon gets traded, I think Jawar Jordan makes the team. If Dameon doesn't get traded, I think Damian's on the team.
I think that, Jawar Jordan as a receiver, too, has been really,
really good
intriguing.
Against the Giants. Yeah.
I feel like he's shown enough as a receiver in preseason games that they might not expect him to clear waivers. And I like, because he was a guy that, you know, people, and they're still going to be curious about, okay, he's a smaller guy, just how does he stack up? And he hasn't had a chance to go against starting defenses yet, but people are going to be intrigued by Jawar Jordan, I think, by his preseason performance. I'm going to be surprised if Cam Akers isn't on the team.
I am too. The wide receiver room, how that shakes out. I think there truly are probably guys in this wide receiver group where this is like American Idol tomorrow.
I think that right now, if Nick's trying to be as objective as possible about it, I think Nick might be at a spot where he's going to see what the trade offers are. And that might decide.
You talking about for Pierce?
No, for wide. I thought you said
for
wide receiver.
No, I was. I thought you were about to say something about Cam Akers again.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
No, for wide receiver. You thought I wasn't listening to you, Sean? So for wide receivers, I think that it might partly be, all right, let's see who gives the juiciest trade offer. And I don't want to act like we've got money to burn or anything, but it's a hard decision to make. And a trade offer from another team might be the thing that's a tiebreaker.
Yeah, for sure. I think the Pierce situation and the back end of the wide receiver room are kind of similar from that standpoint. And there's guys on the team who have value maybe to other teams who just can't make the Houston Texans. And the last one is Allie Gay.
Oh, Allie Gay.
To see about Allie Gay, number 90.
The way the numbers shake out, I think he's on the squad. I don't think they would have. I think they played him a lot because they wanted him to get ready to play NFL football. He's got really long arms, and he's learned how to use them in the run game. I think as a pass rusher, he's improved, and there's potential there. And I think he's played so much in the preseason that I don't think they expect him to clear waivers. There's a lot of film on him out there.
There's a ton of film.
I don't think they would have played him as much as they did if they weren't sure about him. It sounds counterintuitive.
Denico Autry's suspension might have changed the calculus for him,
too.
Yeah. Right? That's when he started really popping up a lot, Allie Gay. So we'll see if he's on the bubble. Can he Lestar Jean or Duke Ejiofor his way onto the football team? No, John Lopez remembers those.
I remember
days.
Lestar Jean.
Duke Ejiofor, yeah. And Lestar Jean, man.
Yeah.
I looked up his bio yesterday. He finished his career. Remember, he had like two touchdowns in a game in the
Camp
preseason.
Camp Star Jean.
Camp Star Jean, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. He had two touchdowns against the Jets. And it's like, he's got to be on this team. And he was for like 3 years.
He was
on the team. And he had like 10 catches. It was crazy.
Allie Gay is very interesting to me. Like, from the time camp started, I'm like, that dude sure does look the part.
Yeah.
Like, he cuts a figure. And then I was talking to to my buddy over here.
His name is Reginald. He's your co-host.
I was talking to him the other off air, and I was saying, I don't know if we should even talk about him because I don't know if he's going to make the squad, but man, he plays a lot with the first team.
Yeah. He was, well, last year he was more gangly last year. He had these long limbs, but he didn't necessarily show his man strength. Mm-hmm. I feel like he got his man strength in last year's, and he learned how to use all that length.
So he's making it?
I think he is.
I feel like he is too, and we haven't mentioned him.
Yeah, I mean, in watching preseason games, right, the extent of what I've gotten a chance to see, I've seen him a few times. I'm like, oh, who's that? Right. Yeah. Like, and I think that is probably a compliment and a half when you talk about somebody at that level trying to cut the 53.
Yeah. And he's been playing against some starting offensive linemen and just he's held up. You know, it's he's a guy that he's not flashy whatsoever. It's more of a size and strength game. But the speed you can make up. For a lot of speed with just taking big steps. And you just got to learn how to do it. You just got to refine everything. And he's made a lot of progress.
A couple of people asking things on the text page here. And we're going to talk to John Lopez and Reginald Atatula here in just a second. They're in the loop. John Harris said British Brooks was taking fullback reps. Is he a viable option? He was taking fullback reps this week. I have no idea if he's a viable option at fullback.
I think Andrew Beck might be like the fullback, but on PUP to start the season. I have no idea exactly what his injury issues, like how bad they are. He just hasn't played much in the preseason.
Yep. When is 53-man roster cut day? The deadline is Tuesday, but you'll start to see guys get cut probably Sunday.
Sunday
after
the
game. And
I think with the Texans, you'll see a lot of the old guys. And it's announced or it's reported that he's going to be cut, and then all of a sudden he's traded.
Trade. Over under 1.5 of those.
Over?
Yeah, I think there'll be more than one.
Two. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I think at least one receiver. I'd take the over on 0.5 for receivers.
For receiver? You think there will be a yes on receiver?
The Texans in a surprise move are cutting Noah Brown, and then all of a sudden Noah Brown gets traded.
That's how they got Skowronek on this team. They were going to cut Skowronek with the Rams, and Texans are on the other end of that.
Yeah.
You know, but they, here's Skowronek in a seventh for a sixth. I could see that happening for sure. So what's going on, fellas? How we feeling?
Feeling pretty good.
Yeah.
I do want to take a little bit of umbrage. I appreciate you guys always listening, but then also kind of not listening because you came at us.
I did. I feel like I presented the nuance.
We're talking about flag football?
Yeah, we're talking about flag football.
We played the quarterback, the USA football flag quarterback. He said he thinks he's better than Mahomes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I said that you guys were skeptical, but you thought that it would take Pat Mahomes a week of practice to get as good as that guy is at flag football.
I stand by that.
Yeah, that's John. John stands by it. I think that it would take longer for sure. But my point was, I made it very clear, nobody's hearing your point when you bring up Patrick Mahomes.
Oh, okay. All right. So I didn't present the nuance. You shouldn't have chosen Pat Mahomes. Well, you know what though? Okay. This is where I don't think Pat Mahomes would be as good at flag football. Like, that guy runs a lot. And it's like, if you watched it at all,
there's
a whole
lot
of.
See how he does those dips and moves and all that stuff?
Yeah. There's moves
you drop
there specifically
so they
about keeping them away from your flag.
Yeah. Right.
That I don't think it's as simple as for any NFL player to get good at that really quickly. And also including the actual grabbing of the flag.
Yeah.
We saw that in 2018. They had one of those, flag football guys versus pros event. I think Seneca Wallace was the quarterback, and he picked up a team of like NFL guys or former NFL guys. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
In 2018. I know this because one of my friends is like kind of a flag football guy, and so he was really tied into those folks in there. And the flag football guys won, right? You come into their domain, it's going to be difficult. But I just didn't know that this was the way to go on trying to make your point, going after what is like one of the few things in American society that we all agree on is Patrick Mahomes being the best football player. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Well, he also brought up football IQ, which I thought was a mistake. That's football IQ.
Well, he conceded that. Oh, no, he said, well, but for flag football IQ.
It's not what he said.
The analogy I had was it's like a baseball player going to play cricket. Like, it's a different, there's a lot of similarities, but it's a different sport. Like, I don't think Joey Votto in his prime could get in there and stand at the wickets or whatever the hell.
Kyle Brandt had the best dismissive rant about this.
Yeah.
Very measured rant. He's like, look, Hoosh, I'm going to give you a pass here. But, you know, like when they have miniature golf someday in the Olympics, just because you can put it through the clown's mouth and hit it over the fake alligator doesn't mean you're Scotty Scheffler.
I'm going to start taking up. I'm going to do a deep dive on flag football this weekend because I'm going to start taking up.
I'm not saying he was right. I'm just saying it was funny.
Sean, I live in a nation that has a long history of hubris when it comes into conflict in lesser nations where they think like, oh, yeah, we'll just go in and we'll just bomb.
Are you talking about Vietnam?
Yeah, I'm talking about, I'm talking about World War II. Okay. When people thought, like, oh, Japanese can't fly airplanes the way we can. Like, oh, crap.
Yeah. Don't underestimate. Don't ever underestimate.
All right. Well, we look forward to listening to you guys for the next 4 hours so we can tear into you on Monday.
Excellent. I would expect nothing less.
Good stuff. All right. Seth, I'll see you tomorrow at 9 a.m., my friend.
Whatever.
Antibody. Dude, see you.
Flag football hater.
Doucette hater. All right. We are done. We're out of time.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.